camcorders, if you remember what those are. If you don't, ask somebody that looks a lot older than you. But they would record videos of Ken doing demonstration labs at the Geneva chemistry, in the Geneva chemistry classroom. They would make copies of those, and they would mail those out to students so that they could understand what was happening in that chemical process. And so they had a series where Ken and his wife Dee and their son and daughter Nate and Libby had this like video distribution business where they would sometimes be waiting for a video to come back so they could send it to somebody else. And so they were taking advantage of the technologies that were available to them at the time and trying to make the material as accessible as possible, because the end goal wasn't to be a chemistry student or an algebra professor, or an algebra biology professor. The goal was to get them into these nursing programs so that they could move forward in their career and calling. And so over time, you know, I mentioned, yeah, the advent of email. And at some point, our current president, and he's also one of the owners of the company, Steve Mihalik, who's a part of this church, said to Ken, you know, they build robots that can do some of this stuff. And so they built an online learning management system to be able to offer the courses through. And that's where our story really picks up. So it was like a small family-owned opportunity to serve this unique population of students. And then with the advent of the internet and the development of this learning management system, more and more students began to come to Portage to receive this education. And a lot of that was just through the model that Ken used. Was he wanted to serve the students, but he also wanted to serve the school. So these hospital nursing programs ended up telling other folks about the value and the service that he brought. And so it really was this old-fashioned, like American, like business story, where word-of-mouth referrals began to create other needs or opportunities. And Ken was always just looking to resource those needs. If you were to talk to Ken today, Ken would say, I'm not a business person and I'm not an entrepreneur. Yet the three of us sit here as vice presidents of a company that employs about 95 people and served, you know, I think about 20,000 students last year. And so for me, I'm always like, wow, what would happen if Ken was entrepreneurial? What would happen if Ken was a business person? But over the years, this has all continued to develop and take different shape in terms of the how of what we do, but the essence of what we do has always remained the same. And for Ken, his desire was to uniquely serve the needs of students, the schools that they were making application to. We eventually partnered with Geneva College to offer college courses, and so I think we have 30, 31 college courses that we offer now in partnership with Geneva, as well as the six high school level courses that we have. And then as it grew beyond his immediate family, his employees, and he would say to any of us, he would say, I feel like you're all my children. I think Ken just turned 80 this year. So Ken would say, you know, I feel like you're all my children. And he doesn't mean that in a demeaning way. He means that in a very affectionate way. He feels a deep, intense responsibility to all of us as he helped to like lead and guide our organization into where we are today. And so for me, as a part of that, it's a joy to know that that's a part of our story. This DNA that was seeded in us all these years ago has this story that's rooted in identity and calling, right? Those things being secure, and then God taking that expression and multiplying it now to, you know, serving 20,000 students like every year. We continue to add new staff. I say we have about 95 employees. I think we have 8 open positions. So there's always this, you know, sense of growth and change that's happening within the organization, but it's never come at the expense of serving. And for Ken, you know, that identity is secure in Jesus Christ, knowing that God put him on this planet to be a teacher and to teach chemistry. And now we all get to participate in that in our unique areas of calling and influence.
Thank you, Michael. So I want to give a better glimpse of what that looks like inside. I spent the majority of my career in commercial banking, and so coming from corporate America into a company like this was a welcome change, but also quite shocking in the way that we operate. So we often talk, when you look at the scriptures, of the upside-down kingdom, and we try to bring that motto inside to our workplace. So we can share things that we have, like we do have a monthly Bible study. We make time on Fridays to have lunch together in a room, and then we go over a little study, which is kind of like a Bible study, but it's more of an open discussion. These are expressions of the kingdom that we can have, you can have in many companies all across the world, per se. But we also want to be different in other areas as well. So something that we do, even from the onset of a new employee starting, is when we bring them through orientation, we operate through this work called Invitation Challenge, and it's who Mike Bream, I believe, was the starter of that.
It sounds like you folks that are Crossroads people, at least, would be familiar with his work. 3DM, Mike Bream. We borrowed a lot, maybe even stolen a lot, from some other people and places that, you know, have their work primarily in the church, and we've adopted it into our workplace.
Yeah, so what I wanted to do this morning is take some of that and share with how we foster this into the leadership of the company. So one of the first things that we look at is how do you build a great team? And so I put five pillars of what we try to strive for a great team inside our organization. And we foster togetherness. We recruit and keep the best talent. We bolster accountability. We want to make sure that clarity is in job descriptions for each employee that is out there. We structure ourselves for growth and peace. I don't know if many of you have been through growth. Growth is challenging at times, right? So we have been through a substantial growth. Even since I've come on, I came on about 2 years ago, a little over 2 years ago. We have hired probably 25 plus employees in just my time there. And going back even further, so say around 2018, I believe we had a little over 35 or 37 employees at that time. And now, as Michael said, we have 95. So sometimes that growth is painful. There are old ways of doing things in a family-owned business that we now have to put parameters and structure around that at times aren't fun. But we want to foster togetherness so that we are all on the same page and we all are striving for the same goals. And we maintain rhythms and finish lines. So after all this goes, we want to also talk about kind of the management style we have. We often use in corporate America the word manager, and it's something we try to shy away from in our leadership roles. So something that we have taken on is more so a leadership role in discipling. So the individuals that report up through me, I want to disciple them. So there are some items I look at when I'm meeting with my team or when I'm having my one-on-ones with members of my team that I want to take a notice of to see where they need to grow, because ultimately I want to train the people that are below me to be my replacement, to be able to do what I do. I don't need to be around for everything. In fact, I wrote down earlier when I was looking at this, when I'm needed for anything, I probably frustrate everyone. So I don't want to be needed for everything. I want to prepare the people that flow up through me to be ready for that. So four things, and this is stolen from many podcasts or teaching that I've listened to or even situations like this that I've been in, and most of you have probably heard some of these things, so it won't be all that new. But we look at character, chemistry, capacity, and calling. The character, do I trust you? Are you loyal? Chemistry, do you align with us? We do not want to put someone who says the right things but doesn't do the right things. Capacity, can they stay with us through the growth? Going from 40 employees to 95 may not seem that big, but it is substantial. And getting through that growth, and I think we're still operating through that. We're still navigating some of this stuff, right? It's not all textbook, especially if we want to operate the way that we want to operate. Calling, willingness to pay the price. What is the calling of each person on the team? So I have an individual that reports through me that in his calling, I have just seen such a skill set and desire to head way more into the finance side of things from the human resources side of things. And how do I cultivate that with him to bring him in more of to what I clearly see his calling in, and he sees that calling. And you know, I wrote down, we tend to overemphasize some of these over others. We tend to, like, you know, I would imagine the one that's looked at the least is calling. That's all, they do that well and they seem to be happy. But we want to look at, what is our calling? What do we like to do? What gets us out of bed in the morning? I don't want to have an employee that, because they're good at plugging numbers in a spreadsheet all day, I want them to do that. That may make their life miserable, And then there, you know, I want people to come into work, be happy what they're doing, and feel the calling from the Lord that this is what they're where they're supposed to be. We also want to share leadership, so we shy away from a hierarchical structure. So even in our roles as vice presidents of the company, there we have team leadership roles in various departments. So I think Bjorn said earlier, like, you can give what you have. Well, we go by this saying, you can give what you've received. And we don't want to operate on empty. So we want to operate and lead out of the overflow in our lives. So when I was thinking through this, you know, a couple stories even from the Bible come to mind. And I don't know if anyone's familiar with Exodus 18, where Jethro, Moses' father-in-law, brings his kids and his wife out to the wilderness to meet with Moses. And he hears all these stories of all the great stuff that is going on in the wilderness, all these miracles, the Exodus out from Egypt. He's hearing all these great things, and he meets with Moses, and they talk. And then he sees Moses sitting and judging all the peoples and all these people coming to him. And Jethro's comment to that is, this is not good for you. It'll wear you out. We can't operate out of empty. Even the leaders need to recharge, need to refill, and we got to operate out of the overflow in our lives. So we are very intentional on that. So what did Jethro have Moses do? He found other people to help him out in these things. The same situation happens in Acts 6 when the disciples are overwhelmed and they need someone to help with the widows and the tables and the prayer, and they appoint the deacons at that time. They appoint people, and then it was a period. If you follow that chapter in Acts, it then ends with a period of growth and peace. So we want to operate out of the overflow in our lives. And I think oftentimes as leaders, like I said earlier, we think we need to be involved in everything and that we are so needed, we have to be seen. And, you know, like I shared earlier, if I'm needed for everything, I'm going to frustrate everyone. So when I was thinking through this, it kind of came to my mind, and someone used this example a while ago, so I thought of this person saying it. You know, how many of us can recognize the teacher in Charlie Brown? Remember the voice, the you know? So we all remember that teacher. She's never seen. We never see that teacher, but she's known, and her presence is known. So that's not that we should never be seen as leaders, but we want to equip the people in our company to be able to do that, that we don't need to be in all of that, that our unavailability is not because we don't want to be involved in something or we don't want to handle something, but we're unavailable because the people that report up through us or our peers or that serve alongside of us can do all of these things. So that is kind of how we want to operate inside of Portage as a business on mission. And at times it's hard. At times it's tough. There's a lot of things that are ingrained in us to operate. There's a desire in many, you know, to control. There's also a power aspect, like, I can say no to this and it just happens. But what's it look like if we sit back and listen? What's it look like if we do the thing that Jesus would do as opposed to what the world's going to do? And I know with these two on that are sitting up here with me, along with Steve Mahalik, the president of our company, when we have our executive leadership team meetings, we open in prayer. We seek the Spirit's guidance in what we do. And to others, it may sound crazy, and we do not have a company full of Christians. And we are not a Christian company. We are secular. We do operate under Christian moral values. But we are not, per se, a Christian company, and we are not going to exclude anyone from being hired because they are not a Christian. But these are the ways that we want to operate. We want the hand of the Lord to guide us, to show us where to go. And, you know, a pastor once said that really stuck with me, you know, when it seems logical, it's often not God's will, because God's will often seems illogical. And we laugh up here. But sometimes one of the hardest things in our positions and in Portage is the illogical. It seems illogical on ways that we operate and navigate the world that we're in. But again, we want to make sure that we are seeking the kingdom first. That's kind of how we operate inside.
And one other way that we can kind of consider bringing the kingdom to our workplace is through our company values. And I almost laugh to say that because if you're familiar, I don't know if your company has values, they can either be very deep and meaningful or they're kind of corporate PR gimmicky. But Michael and I were talking a little bit and saying, you know, whether you work someplace where there are a number of Christians there or whether there aren't, that is, whatever your company does value, or if you kind of unite and find the good of where you're at, and I think many of us have done that in our prior workplaces. I've done that. I formerly worked at Carlo University, and there were lots of places where I united with others around values, around good people who were believers found each other. But it's wonderful also in our workplace where we have a uniting vision of things. And so our values are, as a company, are excellence, service, support, and innovation. And I just want to go through these that kind of unite and illustrate what both Michael and Jeff are talking about. But just to kick us off, too, but to start us off with excellence, actually, I don't know if you're familiar with Dorothy Sayers. She was friends with C.S. Lewis, so that kind of points you to where she was in history. She says something that I think is so in keeping with what you're learning at this conference and what Bjorn was just talking about earlier. She said that work should be thought of as a creative activity undertaken for the love of the work itself, and that man made in God's image should make things as God makes them for the sake of doing well a thing that is well worth doing. And she's someone who really spoke out against dualism to say, you know, this like sacred secular divide. And you can kind of see like we're uniting these things in very different, unique ways and doing business's mission in a kind of countercultural way. And heeding her warnings where she said, you know, historically the church hasn't done that. So I really appreciate a conference like this where she said historically the church has told someone, say like a carpenter, to be a good Christian, like in your life and in the workplace, don't get drunk and go to church on Sundays. But what we should be telling people is that he or she should make excellent tables. And that's our approach to excellence, to say we serve the Lord through our work, through excellence. But there are pitfalls there too. So there's a perfectionism, right? If we make excellence our aim and we're not keeping Christ as center, that we're worshiping Christ through what we do in our everyday life, we could say, well, my excellence is, you start to have these competing priorities. And so it's good to keep in mind that when we're making excellent courses, when we're doing innovative technologies, these are two things we do as a company, if we're creating excellent new systems, like the three of us are always working on as we migrate a family-owned company to a larger corporation that has a heart and is also family-owned. These are all examples of excellence, but one way that we think of how we pursue it to not fall in that pitfall of like these competing priorities and perfectionism is viewing excellence as love in action. So we just finished a one-year training on our own core values, and that's how we conceptualized excellence. That it's love in action rather than perfectionism. And we defined it as not necessarily striving to be the best. Not that there's something horribly wrong with that, but there's an inherent competition there. And again, we're trying to strive toward collaboration, non-hierarchical, so not competitive, but striving to do the best, not for self, but for others. And the result is hope and care. True excellence is an act of love designed to bring happiness to others. It is love made visible. So this is kind of how we've been training each other and teaching each other. And just as you heard Michael and Jeff speak, we are trying to be other-centered. So in the academic unit, the language we use, I don't know if you're familiar with instructional design, but in online classes, you have educators, but you have people working the technology space, and we have artists too. We have a particular approach to how we create courses, and we say that we're using learner-centered design. And it's kind of fun because we're uniting people, again, we're uniting artists. We have somebody doing instructional design who has an IT and a newspaper background, and it brings a really wonderful, unique perspective. And he's the one that started really using that phrasing, learner-centered, to say our excellence is service-oriented. So all of these values are interrelated. We are school-centered, as Michael mentioned. That's been part of the founding of our organization, to say We don't graduate students. We are uniting students to where they're at now and where they want to go, where they're going vocationally, helping them to find that mission. We're a little cog in that piece, and we're trying not to, we don't want to be a bigger part of that cog. We don't want to eat up more of their vocational journey. We're trying to think what is most useful to them right now and their schools that they will graduate from. So we're understanding our role there and how to make them. So we're trying not to, again, what is the need and keeping that in mind rather than just growth for growth's sake or making money for money's sake or businesses for business sake. And we strive to be other-centered in our interactions with one another, as Jeff just mentioned. And then similarly, so innovation as a second core value, it's a really common core value. You hear of innovation all over the place. But again, how you actually approach that, to say not doing innovation for innovation's sake. Actually, our head of our communication department, he says that all the time. We say that to one another. We're not just doing and pursuing cool new technologies in the education space just for that sake alone. But innovation to serve a need, because we're listening to Ken's original vision there. And so one way that we show this is through, we are always pursuing new technologies. We're trying to explore, we're gonna redo our anatomy and physiology courses. And what's a cost-effective way to do that? What is gonna be the most engaging for students? What's going to kind of, not necessarily just push the envelope for the sake of doing it, but to be more immersive, more engaging, how it looks on the screen, because creating an environment for the students, something that's beautiful, but also will help. As I was talking with the filmmakers on our team, I said, do you realize, I'm a psychologist, that where you learn the content matters. You'll remember that space in a way, and that's what you're creating for our students. You are creating the reality in which they're gonna take in that information. So how do we approach that? How do we approach innovation from a service mindset? We did a chemistry course, which chemistry is not my favorite area, as a choose your own adventure book model to courses, where students get to choose within the video outcomes, and the instructor filmed multiple takes. So doing things like that are very engaging. And then we could give lots of other examples. Our engineering department creates things from scratch, essentially, to do the kinds of things we're doing that nobody else is doing. They're inventing things from scratch to do that space, continuous improvement, and looking at innovation as being inherently collaborative. Our third one is support, and if you look around, that one's actually a more rare core value. It's very not corporate, actually, if you think about it. So it's really doing more inherently some of this missional stuff, in the sense of asking, are we all independent operators, or is our work inherently interconnected? Is that a more helpful way of thinking about ourselves and our workplace, is that it's not just about you being on mission and serving the Lord? How do you interact with others and partner with them to then support others? We talk a lot about coming alongside each other. What does that look like? Can we come alongside each other in our work? We come alongside students, and we come alongside schools, and keeping those three things in mind. And some examples I can give, we use Slack. I don't know if you're familiar with Slack. That's pretty much all prayer requests at this point. But they're not like just this like list of prayers. They are heartfelt. They are engaging. If you put something up there, you're going to have 10 million responses, and then people are going to reach out to you. We recently hired someone who was originally from Uganda, and she came to us by way of Texas, but she'd only been in this country, I think, 3 years, and we were feeling responsible to say, we need to show care and support for this person. She's still kind of uprooted from her country. Her husband's finishing his graduate degree. He's not in Pennsylvania all the time. She's not a single mom, but she's kind of living like one while he finishes his degree. How the company has come around her to support her, from the founders, housing, car, getting her set up, the move, friendship, a recent outing.
Babysitting,
all of these things. Showing support is amazing. I share with some of you, my daughter has cancer. The support that I've received from Portage in terms of prayers, and not just through the Slack channel, other, after staff meetings, cards, gift cards, all of these things. So that level of support. And then finally, I saved service for last, although I think we kind of recognize as a company that undergirds everything. That's our approach. And it makes sense. for those of us on the education side of things, it's a no-brainer. Service is what you do as a teacher. And then we have the double service because we primarily serve students going into healthcare, so they're in a service industry. But if you think about it as Christians, of course, you know, service is inherently what we're doing in the workplace for the Lord, if we're keeping that to the foremost. And so Dorothy Sayers has another quote here that I liked. She gives the phrase, serve the work. And she says another way of saying it is, it's the duty of the church to see to it that the work serves God and that the worker serves the work. And she said, again, anything can kind of get out of alignment and be idolatrous. If I come in and if I say, well, I'm going to make sure that I support Jeff or I serve this student, that could be my idol, like, I'm going to serve this student and make sure that this student, I'm serving the Lord. That's first things first. That's the primacy. And then through my work, and hopefully being all in, like whatever your hand finds to do, work at it with all of your might, that at that moment I may be, I'd love to be like Brother Lawrence praying all the time. I do still aspire to that. But for any given moment, I may be all in on a course design piece in the meeting I'm in. But that is also, I'd go as far as to say ministry and to say that is service to the Lord through your work, and I'm by serving the work, so it's God and what he has called me to do and us to do together, that these are foremost on our minds, how are we approaching things philosophically, but then everything else falls in line together. Then I can think about how I serve other people and how I serve other things. And so one final story I thought to end with here before we open it up for maybe a few questions and other stories is one example of service that I think all of us have told the story is Dave. We have a faculty member who just as Bjorn said, you can only give what you've received. And so being sanctified, allowing the Holy Spirit to work in your heart so that you have a well within you that you can then serve and give out of. We have lots of people like that, but one faculty member who I've been honored to work with at multiple workplaces now, he has that. He loves Jesus. And so when you're put on the spot or something happens and you can just act, because that's deep within you, just to love others. And he's a chemistry professor. Again, I can't admit. Anyway, I'm sure he does a really good job, and our chemistry classes are really good. Not my favorite area. And so he was teaching organic chemistry, which is one of the hardest courses out there. And we have all these instructions, as you can imagine, this sort of an online class and getting set up and all the things, and the students have to listen, and they have to set up a webcam. And this student didn't listen to any of that. She didn't do it right, and she bombed an exam. And as instructors, we write comments. We say, you know, make sure next time you didn't do this right, do you need any help? And so he had written those comments. Next thing he knows, he gets a response back, but it's not from the student. And it's the student's, it was a son or daughter. And she said, and she introduces herself via email. He introduces himself through email, and he says, you know, I am so-and-so's son. I just want to let you know that our mom has severe dementia, heart health issues. She's not remembering things. She may never get that right of how to do the test correctly, but she loves your class so much. She's a retired chemistry teacher. And here at the end of her life, we hear her putting your video on. She'll watch it 15 times in a row. She thinks she's doing great in your course, and she is so joyful and just loves getting this content. We're sorry, we can't promise that you'll do any better, but we just want to let you know. The response he gave back, that I did not bring with me, but I think Michael's read out loud before too, the response he gave back had us all in tears in a couple meetings. And I have to say, as a teacher, what you usually find rewarding in your work is seeing how people grow and what they learn. And so he was never going to get that reward from this student. And despite that, the level of care and attention he gave to her through the rest of this course, how affirming his messages were to her. She did finish. She did complete. But he was so supportive. How much more work for him to support a student like that through the course? But that's kind of our example that we've given to encourage one another to keep doing things like that. Anything you'd add, Michael?
I was just going to say, he actually solicited her feedback and just honored her by saying, as a career educator, I would love to know from you if there are areas that I could improve in as an educator. I just see, like, you know, the humility in that, to honor her by inviting her feedback of his instruction. So, yeah, it's just one of our good stories. But I don't remember, Andrew, where we are in time, but.
Yeah, we have a couple minutes. So Yeah, open it up to questions. I'll take the mic. Any questions for Portage Crew? Yeah.
All right. So I'm in the process of building a team. Our business has grown, and I went from 12 people to 60 in 2 years. So I'm navigating that, obviously. What are some keys you could say to doing better recruiting? I've not done a good job of bringing quality people in. It's more of bodies over quality, but that has proved very difficult. So what are some keys to bringing in good, recruiting in good talent?
I would say, first, you've seen incredible growth in probably the most disruptive time, in our job market. And so I don't say that to discourage you, but we find ourselves confronted with some of those same challenges. We talked about the open positions that we have, and I will tell you that I think about software engineering, there are a lot of really good software engineers. We want to make sure that we hire software engineers that understand who we are and the value that we bring through our engineering. And so the student as the end recipient of the work that we do, we want it to be excellent. And so I've sat in a number of preliminary interviews with software engineers that we haven't extended an offer to because there's just a clear sense that they don't understand who we are and the value that we're attempting to bring. And so my first bit of advice might be to slow down and to really be careful. I think about those five C's, Jeff, that you highlighted in terms of the things that we look for in terms of character, character calling, competency, all of those things that you want to evaluate. But that's incredible growth, and I'm sure that has felt, I think about igniting your workplace, you probably feel like your hair's on fire all the time. So there's some serious ignition happening, but maybe just slowing down will be helpful because, you're all familiar with different, cycles within an organization or life cycles. And I think about that, whatever this has looked like for you, form, storm, sounds like you're in that storm phase. But I would just be really careful and really intentional with hiring, even if you feel that may come at the sacrifice of some other opportunities. I just think about how we value quality within our work, and we're willing to pump the brakes if it means even starting over. We even Steph talked about core values and think about the onboarding process for us, and we talk about creating space for failure. The reason that we can create space for failure within our work is because we trust one another. And if there wasn't trust, there wouldn't be room for failure. People just, be constantly at odds with one another. And so I would just encourage you in that way to say, make sure that you're hiring the right folks. Because if you're in this massive expansion, you don't want to grow too fast, and that come with the consequence of the company, obviously.
Yeah. If I could add to that, something that I look at and we try to look at in the HR group, we don't want to get attached to one person in an interview process. So we always want 3 to 5, if not more, people running for this. And you can easily get attached to one person in there. And we try our hardest to withdraw ourselves from that and really see who this person is and what the fit would be like with the company. I will tell you from a finance standpoint, it will cost the company a lot more to hire the wrong employee than to take the time to find the right one. And that's hard as well. I can say one of the positions we have open is an HR person because our director of human resources right now it's a department of one. And he was the same department when we had 30 employees, and now we have 95 or 93 or 95, however many that we have, and it's overwhelming. And this interview process that I've been involved in from the beginning has been going on since November. And it's not fun with the amount of work that needs to be done and the amount of things that need to be done in the company because of this. But I just know it would be far worse if we brought in the wrong person that wasn't a fit in our culture and in our company. So I really, one of the biggest things is try not to get latched onto one person and make sure that there are others that you're bringing in throughout this entire time.
Thank you. We have time for maybe one more question.
Maybe maybe just as a closing comment, if no one has a question, I think about the nature of this conference. And again, we do appreciate the opportunity to come and share a bit about our work. And we're certainly available, you know, for any questions or, you know, any interactions that might be helpful moving forward. But I just think about in this context of discipleship, you know, the first and most important thing, and I'm sure it's already been said, is just cultivating the person of Christ in your life. And I think about, you know, we talked about having like room for failure within our work because there's trust. We see the ongoing work of Christ in one another. And even in hard conversations, even in places of hard decisions, we can lean into that assurance that we are all operating as much as is possible, right? In the flesh and in the spirit, to honor one another and to honor the opportunity and calling that Jesus has put before us. And so that starts with ourselves and just cultivating the presence of Jesus in our lives. And you know, one of the things that I can remember we said, I think it was even before Steph and Jeff were with us, and Steve and I would talk about one of the unique advantages that we had as an organization is that we hear from Jesus. And we do see that as a competitive advantage in the marketplace, that we hear from Jesus. And so I would just encourage you, whether you're an employee or an owner, whatever that might look like in your unique expression of work, it has to start with you, right? And I think about, like Bjorn talked about, what cultivating the presence of Jesus looks like in his life. I love that. It's Jesus in my pillow and my coffee. Whatever that looks like for you, however you soak in Jesus, like however you bring the presence of Christ into your everyday routine, start with that. Don't ever depart from that. You know, Steph was referencing Dorothy Sayers, and she made a comment about Brother Lawrence, right? Just the cultivation of the practice of the presence of God in our lives. And he'll take care of these other things. Even if you're like, you know, running around with your hair on fire with like massive, you know, increases in your work, if you can learn to cultivate and just center yourself in the place of Jesus, it makes all the difference in the world.
Thank you guys so much for spending some time being here.